So you were a student at the West?
Yes, I was a student at the West of England Academy in Bristol. Mm. You see, we'd be about the 1900s. And I was associated with several others. One was Stanley Anderson, who became, we were all young socialists, who became RA, another who became CBE, and so on.
You were all art students, were you, Mr.
Yes, we were all art students. Mm. And they chalked the pavements, these suffragettes, said there'd be a meeting on the quays night. Well, we went down there, and they, of course, didn't know the Bristol crowds, and they didn't know the terrain. See, the docks there used to come right up into the center of the city. You had ships next to churches. But now, at this point where they were, the lorries were lying for the unloading of ships, and it was the dead center of the town. They mounted one of these lorries, these young suffragettes. They commenced to speak. And you know, open air speaking is one thing, and indoor another. One of the girls had a high, squeaky voice. Of course, the crowd that was beginning to gather, they were hilarious at this. And then another girl, who became my wife, essentially, was Millicent Price, Millicent Brown, her original name. She got going, and she had a booming voice right through her life. She died at 93. And her voice was always her whisper in the Quaker meetings heard all over the place. So that she got going and held the crowd. But they discovered these lorries were not locked in any way. And so they commenced to push. There's nothing on a dock, you see, to prevent it, straight into what we'd call the float. And the wagon began to move, and it wasn't very far, perhaps 20 yards from the dock side and the water. Well, we, Anderson and myself and another fellow by the name of Morris Hand, we realized the danger. In a few moments, they'd be in the river. They'd be in the Avon. And we commenced a fight with the fellows who were doing it, you see. And so there was a real scrap up in we were yelling to these women to jump and get off. That was the beginning. So that was the beginning of the endeavor on the part of the suffragettes to start a campaign in Bristol. Well, they campaigned in various ways. There's Durham Downs, for instance, great downs, magnificent place for any open air work. They had meetings there and meetings everywhere. And so, as far as Bristol was concerned, that was the kind of thing that went on. And they invaded the various Avonmouth and various other places, speaking. And of course, the crowd, they'd never met women on these terms. They were either a source of fun or a source of dislike. Go home. Go and look after your kids. Do your women's work. Which was the kind of jeer, you see. And a few men who would try to help. We were very few, of course, and we had our own lives and vacations going on. And they took a small shop just opposite, which is now the university there, and sold their literature, and they went out on these various missions. So that was my first contact with them.
You know,
they were almost academic societies, you see. There was nothing doing about it. When these girls came along doing this, this was another thing. And so eventually it got to the point, as the several years rolled by, that no woman was allowed into a meeting for the simple reason that when they were, went to their meetings, these political meetings, and it was a liberal government under Asquith, they get up and say, why don't you enfranchise the women of the country? Why are we shut out? Why are we classed with lunatics and criminals and other non-voting members of the community? And they were immediately thrown out violently, you see. But they would, for about three quarters of an hour, as the crowd assembled there, and it's a very, very big hall, holding something like that, they'd sing revolutionary songs, more or less, you know, Rule Britannia and the rest of it, and so forth. Rather funny when you think of it. And the organ was playing and so on. And entirely male, they had tickets. You went in on a ticket. Well, the suffragettes were clever. They managed to get hold of a few of these tickets each time. I was asked to go to several meetings of this. And all you had to do was to be in the audience. Then, if you were wise, you waited till the bloke was perorating as cabinet minister every month on freedom. Newsom, he said, well, why don't you then enfranchise the women of this country? When are you going to pass that bill? So there came a time, I'd been thrown out of two of these, and then Augustine Birrell was coming down. It was going to be a very, very important political meeting. And the newspapers, local newspapers, took it up. And they said, no voice will be allowed over this suffrage business. And the individual who was interrupted before will not be able to do it again. It's by ticket, and so on. Annie Kenny came to me. She said, will you go to this meeting? I said, well, I'm marked. She said, well, she said, we haven't got anybody else. I've got two tickets. Will you go? So I said, well, I don't know what's going to happen. They're very wild. She said, well, they're wild among all of us, you see. Look what women go through. And I knew that it was going to be a very crucial business for me. So I had a brother who'd never been to a political meeting in his life. He was not a socialist. He was a seaman, really, frustrated. He had all the walk and the look of a seaman, but tremendously strong. So I went to him and I said, Chris, why is it you never go to a political meeting? There's a very fine one tonight. He said, I'm not interested. Well, I said, I am. I'm going. Look, I've got a couple of tickets. They're very difficult to get. Will you come? Will you come with me? Well, in the end, I persuaded him. And he came. Well, I got on my oldest overcoat. I put a muffler around my neck. And I put on a thing, I never wore a cap. And I got through the stewards because they were watching out for me. And we had a magnificent seat in the dress circle. And it was just over the platform. And the platform was so arranged, there's a big organ behind. And then a series of seats, I expect you know the setup. And before the meeting went very far, most weird sounds came from the organ. And the people on the platform, this cabinet minister and all, began to look alarmed and look around and so on. Two girls the day before had secreted themselves in the building. They got into the top, the crown of the organ somehow, I can't describe it, I've never been in. And they were shouting down suffrage slogans. And this was being taken up by the organ pipes. And the noise it only made was indescribable. Everybody commenced to laugh. And there was utter confusion. But eventually they were silenced. You never saw them. They found them out there, threw them out. So the meeting went on. And then I let him go until he was perorating on freedom. Of course, that was what I was waiting for. They always did. So I shot out and said, then why don't you enfranchise the women of this country? I said, why do you class women in the way you do with criminals and lunatics? Try them under laws, they've got nothing to do. And then it started. All of the audience seemed to rise. If ever you've been in a thing like that, you know it will probably. It's the most extraordinary feeling to find out all of the great psychic onslaught on you of a great audience, you see. Chuck the bugger out, you see, that's the main thing. And suddenly six men descended on me, and they were thugs. They'd hired roughs as steward, and I held on to the seat in front, demanding a burrow all the time. When are you going to enfranchise? When are you going to carry out the promises that you've made? When is it? Why don't you do it? So they tore me from where I was. They got me right off my feet. And they, you know, the dress circle generally has a series of doors through which you enter. There's a passageway behind, you see. And they carried me aloft through the doors. So the language was indescribable, what they were going to do. And the cry went up amongst these six that were in no camp there. Of course, the audience saw nothing of this. This was in the corridor leading to a well staircase, you see, that went down into the main hall. He said, chuck the bugger over the staircase. And so they were making for it. We were not very far away. And I began to realize that all my peace thoughts, everything of the kind, was going to end in being smashed to bits. This would not. So I began then to land out. You see, I was up in the air. I smashed with my elbow one man across the face and the other on the other side. And just as I got to the balustrading of the staircase, I managed to slide through the ropes, and I locked my arm around the banister and a leg on one of the balustrade pillars, and I was locked. They said, go on, heave him over. And so they commenced to push me. Well, I was locked with the leg round a pillar and ribs on the balustrade, and pushing for all they were worth. Well, I thought my ribs were going to go in a minute. And they're bound to go. And suddenly something came. Something came in like a whirlwind. This was my brother. He suddenly realized that something was happening. And but he said, I, like a damn fool, could only think about your hat. He said, I stopped, he said, to look for your hat. And he came in, and a fellow attacked him, tried to, and he was like, he was tremendously powerful, and he landed out, and he was lashing out like that. And so he got to me. So they stood around and they found what was on now. And so I uncoiled myself off this. We stood there, hung around. They cursing us. And he said, what do we do now? I said, we go down step by step and don't turn. Keep your back to the staircase. We commenced this maneuver and they kept surrounding us all the way. Then suddenly up the stairs came, come on, come on, out of it. Out of it, you. And this was the police. They'd sent for the police. So the police broke in. So you leave him to us. So they said to me, what do you mean by breaking up their meeting? I said, I haven't broken up their meeting at all. All I've done is to ask an absolute straightforward political question. This is what they're doing to me for doing it. So they said, you've broken their meeting. I said, heckling is absolutely political right. You have every perfect right to heckle. And I only heckled him once. So they said to me, come on, come on. We'll get you out. And they got me out, you see, out by the rudder. Directly they got us outside. We were within sight of the harbor, the float. They said, now look, you get off. Get home. They said, these, they'll be out in 5 minutes and they'll throw you in the float. They're mad inside there. They're all gone mad. This was the second do, you see, they'd had the grills in the open. So there was a tram car. There used to be tram cars in those days. We jumped off the tram car and the conductor was sympathetic and pulled us on. And it went. We lost it. That was us. Well, that was it. That was one episode.
That's a marvellous
night. The second master there came up to me. He said, well, Bryce, I'm glad to see you're home. I said, what do you mean? Oh, I was there. I said, were you? He said, yes. He said, I admire your courage, but I think you're a damned young fool. So he said, how do you think you're going to keep your studies up and endure that kind of thing? What I saw. I said, oh, you saw nothing. You were on the other side of the door. And he said, I heard the police were in it, one thing and the other. He said, now look here, my man. You've got to check this. Either you become a professional agitator for the suffragettes. Good career, wasn't it? Or he said, stop it. He said, you can't keep that up. He said, it'll break your nerve. So that was that. And not so very long after, the war came too. So that when that came, the whole of the suffrage movement, of course, rocked. The other thing absolutely intervened, you see. This was a recreation. From their point of view. No, but it so occurred, looking back, you know, time kaleidoscopes events. I've never kept a diary. And I was continually in touch with them, you see, they knew me. As a matter of fact, I was invited by 5 suffragettes at Christmas, on Christmas, to go to Mrs. Bethick Lawrence's home called Homewood, which she lent to them for the Christmas. She wasn't going to be there with her husband. And they could entertain their friends there. It was a luxurious place, I understand. I never mind. But I had nerve to be the guest of 5 leading suffragettes, Annie Kelly, and my wife was among them, and 3 others, Vera Wentworth and so on. And of course, the agitation was going on all the time. But as far as I was concerned, that staircase episode...
That was enough for you, really.
A very important thing to me.
Yes.
I had to do it.
Yeah.
Personally, they were employed, these blokes. They were hooligans of the worst type. And they were employed. Anybody who interrupts us, you play hell with them.
Mm.
That's where, being near the staircase, that was what I did.
Mm.
And so I saw that I should have to be careful in the future. And I didn't alter my point of view at all.
Mm.
And just at that point, I was offered by Sir Stephen Gatty, who'd been Lord Chief Justice of Gibraltar, the most extraordinary honor. You see, I was the leading sculpture student in the Academy, and the man who was training us, he was a very fine metalworker. He was a disciple of Gilbert, who did the Piccadilly Fountain and so on. And he was training me, and I took to metal like a duck to water. And to represent the sufferings.
Crucified women, yes.
And we want the broad arrow to be brought in, because that was what they wore on there. And so, in green gold, that was what I did for them.
Mm.
This one's a bit clearer.
Mm.
These were rather lovely opals around there.
So it's a woman with a robe on, isn't it?
Yes.
And
here's the broad arrows. That was the problem.
Yes.
How you were going to
get
the broad
in.
Arrows in.
Because it's on her cloak, really, aren't they, in a way, the arrows, yes.
But
and that's
and
the back,
this was
it?
My interpretation, that eventually lead to peace between manhood and womanhood, and this is the olive tree.